With the news this evening, and still in the newsroom and in the news booth here is Mark Dinsdale. He's got for us a look at sports. Hi, Bill. We've got so many people on the line here. Hi, Mark.
Thank you, Ian. In Pittsburgh, defenseman Paul Coffey has broken Dennis Potvin's all-time scoring record for a defenseman after collecting his 1,053rd point this evening during the third period of the game against, ironically, the New York Islanders, the team that Dennis Potvin used to play for in the 70s and 80s. In other hockey news, the Canucks are now ahead of the Boston Bruins 3-2 after falling behind 2-0 early in the game. Goals for the Canucks going to Nedved, Cortnell, and Ronning. In baseball now, the Atlanta Braves are headed to the World Series against the Minnesota Twins after shutting out the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-0 in Game 7 of the National League Championship Series tonight. The winning pitcher was Steve Avery. The World Series gets started Saturday night in Minnesota with Jack Morris starting, and Atlanta has not announced their starter as yet. And our last story, the Associated Press has named Cal Ripken Jr., the shortstop of the Baltimore Orioles, the Player of the Year in baseball, and Bobby Cox of Atlanta as the Manager of the Year. I'm Mark Dinsdale, and that's sports. Now back to Ian and Stefan for more election coverage.
Thanks very much, Mark, and we're going to take a short break here. Before we get back to coverage, we are continuing our live election coverage here on CITR FM 101.9, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia, where we're having a look at the results across the province and what appears at the moment certainly to be a very good evening for the Liberals and a so far disastrous night for the SoCreds, and we're going to look particularly at what's happening here in Point Grey. We hope to talk to some of the candidates in the Point Grey riding and how they've done, and we'll continue with that in just a moment.
When it comes to workplace health and safety, did you know you're responsible?
What the?
That's right. Today, employers and workers share responsibility to ensure workplace accidents and illnesses don't happen.
So does that mean, like, my employer could be held, like, responsible if I spilled coffee on myself?
That's right.
Oh, hey, there's potential in this.
Half the battle is knowing what to do. To find out, call the Canadian Centre for Occupational Health and Safety at 1-800-263-8466. They've got the experts, the data, and the know-how. Let them share your responsibility. Call toll-free 1-800-263-8466.
Hello, CITR.
Ah, great. Wrong number.
Excuse me, I can't hear you.
We return now to CITR's coverage of the BC election.
Thank you very much, Antia. Let's go to Phil for an update on what's happening.
Well, we're just getting statistics in from the Vancouver suburbs, and 41% of the popular vote is going to the NDP, but only 3% less is going to the Liberal at 38%. We also saw some interesting statistics. Delta South is now a Liberal riding, and the three Richmond ridings are all strong Liberal leads right now.
I noticed there briefly that Johnston, Premier Johnston, is leading at this point in her riding.
Yeah, but only by 34 votes.
Bill Curry, are you there?
Hi, Bill.
Yes.
Hi. Tell us what it's like down there. It can't be too happy a scene right now with the results we're seeing.
No. As SoCreds start to pour into the Hotel Vancouver, the magnitude of the SoCred defeat this evening is becoming evident as we see returns coming in from the Lower Mainland. At this point, only two cabinet ministers out of Rita Johnson's 17-minister cabinet are leading. That's Peter Duick and Jack Wiseman are the only two SoCreds leading at this point who are in the cabinet.
Have you had a chance to talk much with party workers at all since we last talked to you?
I've been talking casually with some. Many are very frustrated with the way that the campaign has gone, and many are basing their frustration at the feet of Patrick Kinsella, who, of course, was responsible for Frank Miller's Ontario campaign, which ended 42 years of Tory rule in that province. Many are very frustrated with what they call Eastern tactics being brought into the BC election.
Well, I happen to be from the East, and I have to agree with you there. I saw a lot of things that looked very familiar, especially in the NDP campaign.
Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is
Actually, why don't you just pick it up there? You probably were going to say something. I had another question.
Oh, well, generally they're very frustrated with bringing someone in from Ontario to handle the BC campaign. Many are not very comfortable with the past record of the Socreds, of course, but they're not very comfortable with the dwelling on the Ontario NDP and the lack of solid policies that the Social Credit did not put forth in this campaign.
Towards the end of the campaign, there was some kind of a criticism laid upon the media, especially by Premier Johnston. Has there been any kind of talk about that the media has had anything to do with the way the Socreds seem to be going down to great defeat here?
No one has spoken much about the role that the media has had in this campaign. Generally, people acknowledge that many mistakes were made in this campaign that made the Socreds look very bad in the eyes of the media, and eventually, as we're seeing tonight, the electorate of BC.
Go ahead.
It could be argued, however, that it was the Socreds who were making themselves look bad, and the media were simply reporting what they saw. Any comments on that?
Yeah, generally, most people feel that the campaign was poorly planned, and that many of the events that were staged just went so bad that they couldn't be portrayed in any other way.
Any regrets down there about their choice for leader?
I've heard none so far. There's much criticism, like I said, of Patrick Kinsella, who organized the campaign, as well as, of course, the premier's predecessor, Bill Vanderzam. We're also hearing much frustration with some of the cabinet ministers currently trailing in the riding.
Thank you very much, Bill. We'll hope to hear from you very soon.
Okay. I will hopefully have some interviews with some Social Credit candidates as they start pouring into the Hotel Vancouver.
That's Bill Curry. He's the CITR reporter, and he's downtown at the Hotel Vancouver this evening, keeping an eye on things at Socred Election Headquarters. And they sound pretty bleak indeed. We'll get back to Bill as the evening goes on. We have a number of other reporters around the city, and in fact, various places, including Chris Uren, who is at the Liberal Headquarters, and we'll be speaking to him in just a moment. Latest results I have through here from the Broadcast News Wire, and I don't know how this compares with what Phil's seeing on other sources, but the NDP are now currently elected in 20 ridings across the province. That compares to just 2 for the Social Credit. I don't know how fresh those were. That was, they claim that's about 9 o'clock, which is about 10 minutes ago now, I guess. You're listening to CITR Radio and the University of British Columbia, and this is our live election coverage with me, Ian Gunn, and Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont.
And in a few moments, we will have Chris Uren on the line. He is with the Liberals, and there too, the mood seems to be upbeat, just like it has been with the NDP when we've been in touch with Luke Dinsdale. While we wait for Chris to come through, we should just give you some background on the leaders, because there hasn't been a lot of focus on the background. Rita Johnston spent most of her time in BC, and she's been often associated with what she did for about 20 years, and that was run a trailer park with her husband George, who actually the spouses of the leaders, we haven't heard of much from the campaign at all. She ran worked in municipal politics, and then ran successfully for the Socred campaign in the 83 election and was re-elected in 86. Of course, she became premier last April when Vanderzam stepped down in disgrace, then held off a strong challenge from the rival Grace McCarthy, who many say probably could have had a pretty good chance against the Liberals. I guess we have Chris on the line now.
We certainly do. Chris, hi, how are you?
I'm very well, Ian. How are you?
And not too bad. You're at the Liberal election headquarters out in Burnaby. What's the mood like there?
Well, it's pretty exciting out here right now as the results come rolling in and Liberals replace Socreds as MLAs. You're getting a wonderful reaction from the Liberals. They're very happy about the results.
Now, you wouldn't have heard it, but we just spoke to a campaign worker just before the 9 o'clock news in the West Vancouver Garibaldi riding, and she was saying that people there are absolutely ecstatic. We could hear cheers in the background as results were coming through over the radio and the television. They are taking ridings that they never expected to take, and one of the questions we put to her was why there was some backpedaling in the Liberal campaign. Her response was, well, obviously we never expected to do sufficiently well that we would have to have a big party platform. Are there some current concerned faces down there now? They're considering that maybe they're going to have to come up with something, and they never expected that?
Well, I think right now they're just caught up in the euphoria of actually being elected. Michael Stebner nearly choked on his coffee when he saw that he was only 3 points behind in Mowat's riding there of Vancouver Little Mountain. Everyone here is just you know, they're ignoring the negatives and they're very happy with what they've done so far.
And so are there many people there at the moment? You said when we spoke to you last that Gordon Wilson will be down a bit later on in the evening. Is there any sign of him yet?
No, Wilson hasn't shown up. There's a number of candidates walking around being snapped up by CBC and the like, but Wilson himself hasn't shown. Of course, he's been elected, and that was the biggest cheer of the evening, along with Art Cowie, which was another big event here.
Now, how many, did you have a tally there? I don't know how the results that you guys there are seeing compared to the results that we're having here. What sort of numbers do you have for Liberals there?
We're seeing, I believe, 20 leading or elected at the moment.
So that's quite a big number of seats there. Certainly the projections that the BCTV were giving during the day today were so somewhere between 10 and 15 seats for the Liberals. They must be extremely happy.
Yeah, they're very happy, and the popular vote also has them happy. We have about 32%, I believe, they're getting of the popular vote right now. And, you know, they're going to be the opposition this time, which means funding, among other things, and office space, access to libraries and all that, and they're very happy about it.
There must be some Liberal candidates. I don't know whether you've had the chance to speak to any of them, but there must be some of them who were in this election to sort of be good citizens and sort of get out there and voice the third party, never expecting. I mean, some of these people are reading down your election ballots today. People in Point Grey saw people who were bike mechanics and things. Is it beginning to hit home at all, or are people just caught up in the euphoria that maybe some of these people are going to have to totally rearrange their lives and go to move to Victoria, which they never expected?
Well, I was standing beside Michael Stebner as he got his results, and like I said, he was very surprised, talking to his family, geez, what are we going to do with the kids, things like that. I think up until about 2 days ago it never crossed his mind, but I think they just want to enjoy the evening right now.
Well, thanks, Chris. I guess we'll check in with you once again, and once things get going down there, Gordon Wilson, like you say, is expected down there at some point, and we'll also be hearing check-ins from the NDP and the Socreds throughout the rest of the evening.
One more thing. You got a score on that baseball game tonight?
Yeah, who won the baseball game, Trevor? Atlanta.
All right.
Atlanta.
Natural turf. Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks a lot. Chris Uran is our reporter at the Liberal headquarters this evening and also CITR's sports director when he's not busy being a news hound, thus his interest in the baseball game. It's 20 minutes now past 9 o'clock. Results are flowing in like mad here at Election Central for CITR in the headquarters here, Stefan. Don't laugh.
That was Mary.
Oh, Mary. Okay, fair enough. I am Ian Gunn, and with me in the studio this evening, I guess, Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont.
And also Phil O'Keefe is here, and we should really make an update for people that just tuned in as to where we stand with leading and elected. Phil?
Right now we have leading elected. We have NDP leading elected in 48, Liberals 20, Social Credit 7. Some interesting things. Richmond Centre just went, which was a toss-up according to the Vancouver Sun, has gone to the Liberal candidate. I believe his name is Douglas Simons. And I believe Delta South went to Fred Gingell, also a Liberal candidate.
And Mr. Mitchell has won in West Van as well, I believe. They showed that in big red block letters.
Yeah, Mitchell, who was the Liberals' highest candidate, has won his riding.
Luke Dinsdale is on the line very shortly. He's reporting from the NDP headquarters down at the Robson Square Media Center. Luke?
Hi, Luke.
Yes. Things are really excited down here. Everybody's clustered around the television sets watching the results coming in. There was a big uproar, obviously, when Rita got kicked out of her own riding, and things are just really excited here.
We didn't realize that. So Rita Johnston has lost her riding.
That's right. I don't have the exact results, but she has lost her riding. It's been confirmed.
Well, one ahead of CBC then, because that certainly hasn't been on the TV screen here.
Now, this is quite a night for politics in British Columbia. Certainly history in the making. We've got the Liberals doing well in 20, the NDP in 40, complete trouncing of the Socreds. Is there what's the feeling down there? Are people sort of feeling vindicated? They after sort of 50 years in the political wilderness. Well, I mean they haven't been in the wilderness, but in opposition certainly for the NDP. Is there a big feeling down there that finally they've given the Socreds their just desserts?
People are relieved. Basically, they've been expecting this, obviously. It's for now, everybody's really happy that they've finally made it as the leading party here. I was talking to a representative from Surrey, and he was saying basically it's about time, you know, the NDP made it.
How are they reacting to the Liberals this evening? The Liberals are doing far better than I think even the most optimistic polls that the Liberals were talking about earlier today were saying. How are the NDP reacting to the Liberal surprise tonight?
Feelings are mixed, basically. A couple of people I talked to were trying to tell me that the Liberals and the Social Credit are basically the same people. And the Liberal results are not surprising, but Sylvia Bishop was quite surprised with the Liberals. She wasn't expecting any sort of action on that part, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of opposition they form.
We should point out that in Mike Harcourt's riding, he is doing quite well, which is actually quite expected. 261 votes compared to his little-known rivals there, the Socreds and the Liberals, at 92 and 42 respectively. So it looks like Mike is on his way to being reelected in Vancouver, Mount Pleasant.
It appears so, and as soon as he gets here, he's going to be one happy man.
And what time is he expected?
We're not quite sure yet. Darlene is supposed to drop by any minute now. And as soon as she comes down, I'll try to get aligned with her and see what she has to say.
Sounds good. And if you have any other party workers that want to come on the line, they're welcome to come on too.
Fantastic.
Luke, thank you very much.
All right, we'll be reporting back soon.
Okay. Well, we have an interesting change in what we were reporting earlier. Here's
yeah,
Phil.
The Surrey-Newton riding, Rhea Johnston's riding, we're getting conflicting news from the NDP candidates because it seems here that Rhea Johnston is pulling away from Penny Pretty. She, according to the CBC, now has a 240-vote lead over Penny Pretty.
Now, that's certainly very close, and that was expected to be a close-run riding, and I guess there's going to be this back-and-forth all evening between the two of them. It'll be quite a surprise indeed, and a change in BC politics if the Premier is voted out of her own riding.
And certainly would mark, I believe, the first time since Dave Barrett that a Premier has lost their riding in an election.
It certainly would be, yes.
Also, it's interesting, Rhea Johnston, the first woman premier in Canada and the first to lead the Social Credit into the election under her leadership. So, as we said, there's only 10 polls reporting right now, so I think things are going to change a lot before we see any final results in that riding.
Often, election headquarters will have advanced information coming in even before the TVs because they'll have their own electioneers, own scrutineers at polls phoning in as soon as they're finished counting. So the NDP claim that Rhea Johnston has gone down may be correct, in fact.
Well, we have a moment here. Maybe we can sort of shift focus and talk about another aspect of the election. And that is sort of maybe a discussion of how issues were discussed in this election campaign. Do you think issues really got the attention that they deserved in this election?
Not at first. I think initially the Liberals were saying, we are the viable alternative. The Socreds were saying, don't vote for the NDP. Look what happened in Ontario, the big red scare. And the NDP were saying, we're the only ones. It's 5 years. It's time for a change. It was a lot more slogans going on than issues, I think, just from an initial. And then certainly after the debate, there was a necessity for people to really get down to what their platforms were and what the issues were as well.
And what about one aspect of the debate? I mean, obviously the debate has marked a big turning point in this election, especially for the Liberals. And one criticism I read in the newspaper was leveled against the media reps that were there, Vaughn Palmer and Russ Froese, that they didn't really direct it into the debate format that it was supposed to be.
No, did you think that was an effective debate to get the issues out the way it was formatted?
No, in fact, I think the questions by the media panel were very poorly laid out, and the media panelists did very little to encourage the debate between the leaders. In fact, as we all know, most of the debate, most of the hour, was focused on the leaders attacking each other, and Mike Harcourt was as guilty about that as were the other two.
Now, Kevin Evans was saying at the beginning of that, and then also at other points on air during the debate, that most of that format and the problems and the stiltedness that people perceived in that was due to the leaders' own fault. They sat down ahead of time, and I guess it would have been Rhea Johnston and Mike Harcourt, because this was before Wilson came on board, and they agreed to a format. They said, no, we don't want a free-for-all. No, we don't want to do this. We would like to have specific questions asked of us by three media personalities. We don't want to have to talk to each other more than absolutely necessary. So a lot of that, I think, was the individual leaders and, I guess, the people working behind them saying, this is how we want it structured. And the CBC, kind of the impression I got was that they felt that they rather had that format thrust upon them.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that if you look back to the 1988 federal debate, which was also the turning point in that federal election, John Turner went down in that election because of the Liberals felt because of that the free-for-all debate format. And I think there was a lot of negotiation going on as to what the format should be for this debate. And so they almost made their own beds there.
So we've had election now in Canada. I guess the trend is going election by television, election by TV debate. I guess it can't help but be a very, very important part of upcoming campaigns, not here in BC, not just here in BC, but across the country.
I guess especially if they are successful. I mean, what's interesting in relation to this is because leading up to the first debate, Mike Harcourt was quite for the debate, and Rita Johnston didn't seem as supportive. When the first debate was over, though, it seemed the other way around. Rita Johnston, after having a fairly good performance, wanted to come back for a second debate, and Harcourt was the one that refused for whatever reason to hold a second debate.
Now, would it have made much difference, do you think, if the good Lord, I just lost the entire thread of my question there. Do you think it would have made much difference to the way that things went if Gordon Wilson was on board from the beginning and there'd be more than one debate and they'd done this over and over again?
I think so. I think, again, the Socreds and the NDP made a huge mistake in refusing to allow the Liberals to be participant in the debate in the first place. If they had allowed everyone, the Green Party included, then the Liberals would have remained a kind of irrelevant, insignificant party. There wouldn't have been the uproar ahead of the debate about the Liberals being in, and hence the viewership was up that night as well.
Now, something that we've not heard very much from in the campaign, and certainly in the results that have come through so far, have been some of the smaller parties. And we were hoping to hear this evening from a couple of the Green Party candidates and the Libertarian in this riding. So far, we haven't been successful in that. We're still trying. But the Green Party of BC was said earlier in the campaign that they were hoping to run up the middle between the bickering Socreds and the New Democrats. They said they ran about 40 candidates, and that's up from 9 back in 1986. So they've surged up a bit, and they run an environment first and foremost platform, but they've got no leader. How viable do you think that people like the Greens are in these sorts of elections? Do you think that with a party like the Liberals that's come up from virtually nowhere, I think maybe it'll be the Greens' turn next time people are going to start looking at alternatives in politics here in BC?
That is hard to say. I really think that until the Green Party can show themselves in a debate, now mind you, the CBC refused to give the Greens a say in the debate, and I believe that's still in the courts. But there is this whole question about how big does a party have to be before it warrants coverage by the media? And certainly, of course, as we know from our perspective, we want to be able to give candidates enough time to say something. And yet we want to give all the candidates time, too. So it causes a bit of a problem for media, but where do you draw the line? And obviously the CBC was caught twice on that.
They certainly were. John Kennedy, the director of programming down at CBC in Vancouver, went on the air repeatedly saying that Liberals weren't sufficient a force in BC politics to be warned to be part of this. Why bother to include them in a debate? They finally included themselves after they went to court, and look what happened. So maybe the Greens next time.
Well, I think what's interesting as well is that in addition to the debate, I agree with you. Your last question was that whether there should be more debates, increased number. I think there will be. I think there'll be a lot more carefully set out, and I think it shows that people are paying less attention to actual TV advertising as they are to those debates in themselves. Phil, you have some numbers for us?
I have some numbers and just an opinion as well. I don't know if the Liberal Party was that unheard of in BC. I mean, it is a federal party as well, so I think people had Liberal in mind, but just in the fact that it was too small. So I don't know if the Green Party is actually at the same level as the Liberal. I would have put Liberal more in between NDP and NDP Social Credit and the Greens. I think they were a little better known. I don't see the Greens coming on that much, but by the next election.
Yeah, the question is what effect is the Liberals coming up? You're quite right. I mean, they are a nationally known party, but the fact that the Liberals have come up from relative obscurity in BC politics anyway, do you think this is going to give a chance for smaller parties like the Greens and some others as well, perhaps?
I'd say they'd have to be in the politics for much longer than they are right now.
I think people question the legitimacy of the Green Party, even though the Liberals are not officially connected to the Federal Liberal Party. Of course, they separated themselves last year. I think that the Green Party, people don't seem to trust them as a legitimate party offhand. I don't think so.
There is certainly, we should mention that there are other candidates. For example, in this riding, also Betty Green, who was running on a pro-life stance. We had an interview with her with Bill Curry. And some candidates, we should mention, do run not with any expectation of winning, but of course, because the media tends to interview candidates, the issues brought forward by those candidates do get attention during election time. And I think Betty Green had no serious intentions of winning, but certainly her issue, especially with two parties that are pro-choice, the NDP and Socreds, that she felt she had something to say.
I think that's an important point, and especially with the increasing importance of TV, that will be a helpful part of this whole process, and as well as we seem to be in BC moving away from the giant cleavage between two polarized parties, that maybe some of these people can get out with some of their views, and we'll have a broader spectrum in BC, and I think that's part of the process.
You're listening to CITR's live coverage of the 1991 provincial election. I'm Stefan Ellis with Ian Gunn and Mary Hermont. Phil O'Keefe is here with some of the stats and all of our reporters, and we'll run down everyone who was involved in a moment, but it's time to go to the CITR newsroom for this news update with Jane Tilley.
Thanks, Stefan. There's still no sign of an armed forces aircraft missing off Nova Scotia. Rescue officials believe the plane may have used up its fuel and been forced to ditch in the Atlantic, 30 kilometres south of Halifax. There were two men on board the jet. Six Navy and Coast Guard ships and five aircraft are scouring the ocean. Major Tim Dunn at the Rescue Coordination Centre in Halifax says the search will continue throughout the night. Michael Wilson says free trade bashers should eat their words, the trade minister commented after hearing Canadian exports to the US hit a record $9.7 billion in August. Canada's overall trade surplus more than doubled to $1.1 billion in August. Another farm rally was staged today in Weyburn, Saskatchewan. About 3,000 farmers attended. Several speakers said Canadians have to wake up to the fact that hundreds of grain farmers still face bankruptcy despite government aid programs. Premier Grant Devine has suggested a tax on food might be one way of resolving the crisis. Three Haida Indians are charged with violating an order against interfering with fishing lodge operations in the Queen Charlotte Islands. The dispute over fishing lodges goes back to court tomorrow. In international news, Nelson Mandela says some South African police may have turned into a killing machine. The ANC leader told a news conference at the Commonwealth Summit the question of trust between the ANC and President F.W. de Klerk isn't as relevant as violence ravages black townships. Mandela met with Prime Minister Mulroney in Harare, Zimbabwe today. They later told reporters they were agreed on lifting people sanctions against South Africa. They also agreed that economic sanctions should be maintained to fight apartheid. A Texaco oil rig carrying 80 workers is drifting across the North Sea. Coast Guard officials say the rig slipped its moorings in a storm. Two rescue helicopters have been sent to the rig, which is now about 160 kilometres northeast of the northern Scottish Islands. 16 people are dead in a nightclub fire in South Korea tonight. About 20 people were injured, and some are in serious condition. Police say a drunken man poured gasoline on the stage at the nightclub and set it ablaze. Police say the drunken man was angry because he was refused service. And finally, the U.S. House of Representatives has rejected a ban on assault-style weapons and large-capacity ammunition clips. The decision came despite pleas that a ban could lessen chances for tragedies, such as the Killeen, Texas massacre, which took place yesterday, leaving 23 people dead. Back to you, Ian.
Thanks very much, Jane Tilley, in the newsroom here at CITR FM 101.9. It's 25 minutes now before 10 o'clock, and if you're tuning in expecting to hear music coverage here on CITR, you normally would on a Thursday night, but tonight we are, as it might be predicted, doing live election coverage of the election in general, and as much as we can, the Point Grey riding, which is what UBC is comprised of. Time now to check in with the sports desk. It's been a busy night in sports as well, with the Canucks playing hockey and baseball in an extremely hot situation, and Mark Dinsdale in from the sports desk.
Thank you, Ian. In the National League Championship Series, the Atlanta Braves shut out the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-0 to win the National League pennant. The Braves win the best of seven series 4-3. They had to come from behind and win the last two games of the playoff series on the road to gain their first berth in the World Series since the club moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta in 1966. Atlanta and Minnesota and the Minnesota Twins opened the World Series Saturday night in Minneapolis. John Smoltz threw the clinching six-hit shutout for his second victory of the series. He struck out eight and walked one. Pirates starter John Smiley lasted only two-thirds of an inning and gave up three runs while losing for the second time in the playoffs. Atlanta struck early. Lonnie Smith drew a walk, and Terry Pendleton singled to open first. Smith later scored on Ron Gant's fly ball, and Pendleton came home on Brian Hunter's home run. Hunter added an RBI double in the fifth. Pitcher Steve Avery, the left-hander who won games 2 and 6 for the Braves, was named the series MVP. And the Canucks. What can I say about those Canucks? They were losing 2-0 to Boston in their game tonight in Boston, but have come back to lead the game 3-2 in the third period on goals by Peter Nedved, Cliff Ronning, and Jeff Courtnell. Cliff Ronning's goal coming on the power play. Canucks goaltender Kirk McLean is looking for his 6th win in as many games this season. That game is now in the early stages of the third period. Other scores from around the NHL. Philadelphia dumped Quebec 5-3. Detroit beat St. Louis 6-3. Pittsburgh beat the New York Islanders 8-5 in a game in which Paul Coffey scored his 1,053rd point to take the lead in the all-time scoring for defensemen. Chicago doubled Edmonton 4-2, and Calgary is thumping Toronto 5-1 in the third. Minnesota is beating San Jose 2-1 in the second, and of course the Canucks are leading. In a rare Thursday night NFL game tonight, Chicago beat Green Bay 10-0. And that, staggering through sports for tonight, is Mark Dinsdale. Back to Ian and Stefan.
And now back to our coverage of the election events in Point Grey.
And thank you very much, Antira Werda, just one of the many people who is here with us this evening, helping us out in the election. And I am Ian Gunn. With me in the studio this evening is a whole crew of people. Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont and Phil O'Keefe all have microphones this evening and are joining us on the air. And we're going to, in a moment, have a look at some of the interviews that we did with the candidates here in the Point Grey riding. We spent quite a lot of time in the last couple of weeks looking at the Point Grey riding, which is where UBC is and where we're broadcasting from tonight. But before that we do that, let's have an update on the latest figures from Phil.
Okay, right now, no results on this riding yet. Overall, on the last stats, NDP have been elected in 31 ridings, Liberal in 10, and Social Credit in 3. Of interest, Dr. Tom Perry has been elected in Vancouver Little Mountain, and Mike Harcourt has won his riding.
Thanks very much, Phil. Live radio, isn't it a lot of fun? We, in fact, have some numbers here from the Surrey-Newton riding, which is where Rita Johnson is battling for her, well, I guess for her political life. I guess if her party goes down to major defeat, which it appears, and she doesn't get her seat, things will be pretty grim for her. And Penny Pretty, who is the NDP candidate in that riding, currently has 2,800 votes. Rita Johnson has 2,500, trailing by about 300 votes there. That's in Surrey-Newton. And there are still a number of polls to come. Then, in summary, then, NDP leader Mike Harcourt has won his seat in the election. He won 61% of the vote in his Vancouver Mount Pleasant riding. He demolished his closest rival, Todd Guinness of the Liberals. As for the other party leaders, as I mentioned, Socred leader Rita Johnson is trailing in her riding, and we told you earlier, Liberal leader Gordon Wilson has been declared the winner in his riding, and he will be on his way to Victoria next fall.
Well, let's go back to some of the highlights of the interviews we did with the various candidates for this Vancouver Point Grey riding, many of which we hope to hear from very soon. The Social Credit Party was obviously in a very defensive position with regards to its conflict of interest, scandal-ridden record. But Richard Wright expressed hope that a new generation of Socreds would be able to take over.
Well, I was trying to do that by running myself. I'm one of the youngest candidates. I decided to run for Social Credit, and I've traditionally been a Liberal. I've been a very strong Liberal for the last 12 years, federally and provincially. I decided to run because I felt we needed new blood in a center-right political party here in British Columbia. There's a lot of older people. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's just a lack of younger people. I'm encouraged. There's 49 new people running for Social Credit for the first time. I'm one of them. And that's two-thirds of the entire caucus are brand new. That's a good direction for Social Credit.
So you feel that that's one way Socreds or voters can have confidence in the Social Credit Party is that new blood will... Are you implying then that the current group of Social Credit, the older group, is on its way out? And
I'm saying that two-thirds have gone. They've chosen not to run again this time, and two-thirds are running, and I think that's good.
In her interview, NDP candidate Darlene Marzari was highly critical of the Socred fiscal management.
They are runaway spenders. There's no doubt about it. And where did the money go? You don't know. And I don't know. And I chair the Public Accounts Committee. A lot of these expenditures have been blown away in business grants and loans to people that we can't even see the books of. And you know who's pissed off? business. Because small business in this province wants to see a decent, visionary program to bolster them. They don't want to see small business tax, but that's what they've got, small business tax. NDP happens to be lowering that tax. All I can say is social credit is so desperate that they're willing to throw anything now, anything out, and they're riding on some previous 40-year record that WAC might have had at one point of fiscal responsibility. They, this present crew, wouldn't know fiscal responsibility if they tripped over it.
Hmm. Up until the leadership debate on CBC, few thought that the Liberals would be any kind of force to reckon with in today's election. But with no record to stand on, most British Columbians were somewhat uncertain as to where to expect the Liberals to stand on some very important issues. Here is Liberal candidate for this riding, Barry Burke.
They have to take us on spec, and I think once they meet most of the candidates face to face, that's what it's all about. I mean, you have to accept a person on faith, and all we can do is give them general ideas and general philosophies about how we conduct our lives, because we're representing their point of view there. And they have to say, well, he sort of shares the same philosophies of life that I do. And if I were sitting in his place in Victoria, I would probably vote the same way he does. That's about all we can go on. And so we have selected candidates who are very personable. We've had a couple of pretty high-profile people, but mostly just very personable people that can gain people's trust.
And that is Barry Burke, who is the Liberal candidate in this riding of Vancouver Point Grey, where, to the best of our knowledge at the moment, Darlene Marzari, the NDP candidate, is well ahead in the polls. And we are covering the election here at CITR headquarters. We have a number of reporters out in the field keeping an eye on the pulse of the election at the various headquarters. Out in Burnaby, where the Liberals are going to hold their big bash a bit later on this evening, is CITR reporter Chris Uren, and he's back on the phone with us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ian.
So what are things like over there? Have things calmed down a bit?
Yeah, I think things are really toning down here. I think the Liberals are fully satisfied with their results, although they did lose a couple of seats there in the last few minutes. It seems they dropped off from 21, I believe, to 18. That was some concern, but on the whole, they're really ecstatic about becoming the official opposition.
Yes, indeed. The latest numbers that we have here have the NDP in 51 seats, Liberals now in 17, and the Socreds way back, a distant third with just 7 seats that they're leading or elected in. And the popular vote, interestingly enough, 40% of that is going to the NDP at the moment, 33% is with the Liberals, and 24% with the Socreds. So the Liberals have slipped back a bit, like you say. They're now leading or elected in 17 of their ridings, but they've secured 33.4% of the vote. I guess they must be really happy with that.
They are. The comments have been made that perhaps they've been unsuccessful in parlaying their percentage of the popular vote into a percentage of seats, but I think everyone recognizes that's because of Gordon Wilson's dominance in the party, you know, as the only familiar face and so on, and they understand that they wouldn't have anywhere near the support they have now if it wasn't for Wilson, so not being able to translate that exactly into seats is just part and parcel with their success, frankly.
So, do we have any sign of Gordon Wilson there this evening? When we last spoke to you, you said he'd be around in the next hour or so.
Yeah, he hasn't shown. They keep pushing back his schedule. I don't really expect to see him till 10:30, maybe 11 o'clock.
So things are beginning to drag out at this stage. I guess he's up in his riding on the Sunshine Coast. He's going to have to hightail it if he wants to get down here at all this evening.
Yeah, well, they promised he'd be here, but so far he hasn't shown. I don't know if... I'm sure we'll be seeing enough of him on the TV in the next little while anyway, so why get sick of him now?
Good point, I guess. Chris Uren has been a reporter this evening at the Liberal headquarters out in Burnaby, where they're having, from the sounds of it in the background there, a bit of a party.
You bet.
Thanks very much, Chris, and thanks for your work this evening. And if anything big happens in the next few minutes, I guess we'll talk to you. But thanks for your work tonight.
Okay, thank you, Ian.
Chris Uren at the Liberal headquarters out in Burnaby. You're listening to a live election coverage on CITR. It is now 14 minutes before 10 o'clock. My name is Ian Gunn. With us in the studio this evening, Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont, who are helping us out on the broadcast.
And the update right now, leading or elected, NDP 51, the Liberals 17, the Socreds 7, and of course all are reporting right now, so we just have to wait till those results are finalized. Let's go back a bit to the election campaign and talk about where each party really blew it. in the election campaign? And let's start with the Socreds. Mary?
Well, I think the Socreds had blown it long before this election was even called. I think they blew it with electing Johnson. I think they blew it with their timing of calling the election. A lot of people didn't like that. And, of course, we had the scandals at the very beginning of the campaign, which I don't think they handled very well. I'm not sure. What were your impressions of how they handled those scandals initially?
Well, obviously, they had a lot of scandals to deal with them. It would deal with even in the election campaign. And I think Mike Harcourt did a very good job of pointing that out on the debate.
And yeah, and not too not on a too base of a level either. I think he just managed to point them out and say, I mean, any kind of a party that has this many scandals within a span of 3 days, we were talking as well, that's quite incredible. And you have to wonder about the credibility of a party that would happen to.
Let's talk briefly before we go to some callers who are on the line very soon. Let's talk about where the NDP blew it. Overall, the campaign was election campaign was fairly smooth. Where did the NDP fall apart a bit?
I'm not sure if they fell apart. They seem to be so incredibly organized. Of course, an acquaintance who's on the campaign team said, well, they've had 5 years to prepare. But what they didn't prepare for was the Liberals' rise into the opposition position. I don't think they were very prepared for that. I think we had a last-minute switch over to having all their advertising against the Liberals, and that made them look like they're on the same kind of low level as the Socreds. I think that took away from them a bit, but it may have come too late.
There was some talk as to whether or not it was a good idea for Harcourt to engage in the debate. Looking back on how the debate went, do you think that they should have not participated in the debate? Or do you think that the debate was necessary to show that Mike Harcourt could stand up and debate the issues?
I'm one who believes that debates are always, always important. You can't have a leader who can't protect him or herself in Parliament, of course. And also, I think that if the debate had been formatted a little better, I think Mike Harcourt would have been able to hold his own. I don't think he can hold his own in a bickering debate, which is what that turned out to be.
Mm-hmm. Finally, the Liberals. They really didn't have anything to lose until the debate. I know that in the very last few days of the election, there was a bit of backpedaling on Gordon Wilson's part. Do you think that's one area where they blew it?
I think they shouldn't, even though they had those commercials. Did you see some of those commercials they've had out in the last few days? They ended up having a little bit of money to have some commercials done, but the commercials they had were made a year ago. They didn't have enough time to make up anything new. They put those commercials on anyhow. That's what started the furor about the backpedaling on platform, because, of course, it was their platform from a year ago. I think that was a mistake, and I think they should have been more prepared for what happened here. I think they had a lot of signals that this was going to happen, and they appeared to be very unorganized at the beginning of this campaign, and I don't think that helped them any.
Let's check in now with, now that we've covered the three parties, we can talk about where their campaigns were successful in a few minutes. We've got Bill Curry on the line, and he has had a chance to talk with the Socred candidate who ran against Mike Harcourt in Vancouver Mount Pleasant.
Yes, that's right. Randy Vinatter went up against Mike Harcourt in Vancouver Mount Pleasant. Although we have very few returns in so far from that riding, he quite acknowledges that he is lost and hopes to play second, and I managed to get his comments from tonight's election results that have swept the Socreds from power.
Mr. Vinatter, obviously the voters have spoken. What do you think the effect will be on the Social Credit Party?
Well, I think tonight is the beginning, not the end. And it's the beginning of a new generation, a new group of leaders. In this election, we had 48 candidates, myself included, that are committed to free enterprise in this province. I think tonight might be the peak for the NDP, and starting tomorrow, the decline begins. And I think that the voters of BC have not been looking at their love of the NDP, or they haven't voted the NDP in the government because of their policies. I believe it's been basically a backlash against the Social Credit Party.
Do you believe that backlash began under Bill Vandersem, or did it have more to do with more recent scandals than perhaps the campaign?
Well, I think in terms of 1986, the Social Credit Party was riding on a high in terms of popularity in the province. Free enterprise was on everybody's mind, and the leadership abilities of Bill Vandersem brought him to the forefront in terms of his charismatic style and personality. But after that, I think that the people that were involved in cabinet and involved in under him in leadership, I don't think were totally in sync with what his vision was and his vision of social credit as a whole.
Do you think the party can continue under Rita Johnson?
I believe Rita Johnson is a true leader in terms of social credit. I believe that she is a person that is in place to help mend the fences, to help build the party up to where it once was. I think that she's provided solid leadership and made some tough decisions in the last 6 months as premier. And I believe as leader of the Social Credit Party, she'll continue to make those tough decisions and help lead social credit to a comeback in this province and a comeback for free enterprise. Because tonight, I believe if you add the Liberal and social credit vote, if it does not measure up to the NDP vote, then it's a loss for free enterprise, not just a loss for social credit.
That was Randy Vinatter, the candidate for Vancouver Mount Pleasant, who lost tonight to Mike Harcourt, the premier-elect.
Now, there was some discussion there as to where the Social Credit Party goes now that they've gone down to defeat. And we should mention that at this very point, Rita Johnston is trailing by about 40 votes or so in her riding. Now, if she does lose this, that puts a different twist on the future of the Social Credit Party, too.
Yes, it does. Apparently, even with the election defeat tonight, there will be a leadership review. However, most of the party seems to be quite confident in Mrs. Johnson's abilities. However, her ability to continue as leader deteriorates as returns come in from Surrey Newton.
There has been some discussion that if the election turned out as it appears to be turning out, that the Social Credit Party could very well fold. Do you think that's a possibility?
It's dangerous to talk in terms like that at this point because social credit has been a force within the province for 40 years now. Of course, parties that reach a point of decimation, for example, the New Brunswick Tories, which were shut out of the 1987 New Brunswick election after ruling that province for several years, they managed to look into themselves, find a new leader, and managed to win back a little bit of the support that they had lost in the previous election. They broke back in the legislature in this year's New Brunswick election. Social credit doesn't appear to be too worried, just in the fact that the NDP vote has not increased by that much from the last election. They see a huge swing towards the Liberals, and they think that much of that support is fairly soft at this point.
Of course, it is a bit early to start making some definite comments about where the Social Credit Party goes until we find out what happens to Rita Johnston. But if Rita Johnston does go down to defeat, what are some of the rising stars that you can see in the Social Credit Party that would have a chance of making a bid for the leadership of their party?
It's a little difficult to say right now, but there is some dissension in the party at the moment as to which direction they go. They see people like Grace McCarthy, who opposed Bill VanderZam and basically tried to pull out the knives in 1988 in their attempt to ditch him, and they see people people who are strong supporters of the VanderZam era, like Rita Johnson, who some people feel is the only chance to lead this party. It's very difficult right now to see who's young and who are some of the new young faces who may be coming into the legislature for the Socreds that might be able to come forth and lead the party. Right now, I don't really have a tally of which Socreds are leading at this point, and if any have been elected.
It's proving to be a hard job to keep on top of those sorts of numbers, even here where we've got all these various numbers flashing by our eyes every second as things change really, really quickly. What we can say, though, at the moment, though, we do know the number of votes that have been counted. This is as of about 2.5-3 minutes ago. About 173,000 votes have been counted for the NDP. That compares to 141,000 for the Liberals and a mere 102,000 for the Socreds. So the NDP pulling up on, but not quite there, double what the Socred vote has been so far this evening. And the percentages, the percentage of the population who've actually voted, the total votes counted so far, is nearly 500,000. And they are surprisingly close to the polls that have been coming out recently. 40.5% so far have voted for the NDP, 33% have voted for the Liberals, and in the low 20s, 24% have voted for the Socreds. The Greens have had 0.8% of the total vote so far, and other parties combined are coming in at about 1%. So the polls that BC CCTV and other people were running appear to be fairly accurate. And all along, the Socreds were saying, Bill, that the polls you shouldn't laugh at them. But you think this is going to lend some credibility to the polls?
The polls are scientifically based, and generally they tend to have credibility depending if those methods are used. Now, of course, polls can be manipulated through questioning, and that's always a favorite line that parties who are trailing in the polls like to use when they come out. The polls will have credibility. However, the Social Credit Party pretty much knew all along that the polls were going to be fairly accurate. Their fears were, however, as we're seeing now, that much of the Liberal vote, for example, is centralized in the Lower Mainland, and apparently we're getting some good results for the Liberals on Vancouver Island.
Yes, indeed. That's the indication we're having here, too. Well, Bill, you're at the election headquarters. Any sign of the Premier herself yet, or I guess she's still out in her campaign battling for her life?
I'm hearing a roar from the crowd now. That may be Premier Johnson coming out on the floor
now. Yes, it
is.
Yeah, she's at her constituency office right now and actually speaking to her constituency workers right now. And we don't have any way of bringing you the feed, but then we can certainly fill that with other interesting information.
That's what's going on. Bill Curry is at the Socred election headquarters. They are downtown at the Hotel Vancouver, and Bill's keeping an eye on things down there for us. Thanks, Bill, for checking in once again.
Thank you.
And we'll let you get back out there, and I guess we'll hear from you later on.
Sure thing.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill Curry. It is now 2 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock, and things in this election campaign seem to be following a distinct trend, and the NDP well out in front. In case you've just joined us, the Socreds are not doing well at all. They're way back, about 7 seats so far they're battling for. The Liberals are the surprise of the evening, or perhaps not the surprise, with 17 seats in which they are either leading or elected.
One of the interesting things, as I mentioned off the top of the broadcast, is that there has been lots of voter interest in this election. Compared to the last election, the number of advanced polls has doubled. And I think that with all of the events that have happened, we can talk about the scandals with Vanderzem, the conflict of interest charges, and there has been a lot of interest in BC politics. And I believe we have a news break coming up, but Mary, wouldn't you say that with your experiences back east, that BC politics always, do they seem very dynamic and different to you?
They seem very different to me indeed, and especially the parallels, of course, to the Ontario election are going to be fluent and overflowing, I think, in the next week. And I was interested in Mr. Van Adder's comments that it wasn't the BC people loving the NDP, but they didn't want to vote for the Socreds this time. It was exactly the same comments in Ontario, but I think what this did was increase voter participation, and I'm very excited to see what those numbers were.
We all know about the problems that the NDP is having in Ontario. Do you think that Ontarians tonight and tomorrow, when they find out about the NDP victory here, will be somewhat surprised that British Columbians have overwhelmingly supported an NDP government?
Well, it depends on what side of the coin you were on. Some people were saying, well, the Socreds will pull it through. It's all just fog cover, and no one's, the NDP aren't actually going to get in powers. It was almost a type of denial that two of the major provinces in the country could go NDP, which of course has federal ramifications. But I don't think they're having as much trouble as people are saying. I think the Socreds were zoning in on the troubles of the NDP in Ontario. And the troubles in Ontario actually started, as far as I'm concerned, before the NDP even got in power.
The statistics continue to change here as we go through the evening, as I guess they will do. People are leading, and then suddenly more votes come in, and they are not as ahead as they thought they were. Our latest standings, this is as of about 1 minute ago, the NDP are elected now in 46 seats. That is confirmed. They are leading in 5 others. The Liberals are definitely elected in 15 seats. They're currently leading in 2. And the Socreds are elected in 6 seats only, and they are still leading in 1. So at the moment, leading and elected 51 for the NDP, 17 for the Liberals, and just 7 for the Social Credit Party. And I guess the Liberals and the Socreds, those numbers turning out the way they did, has to be the story of this evening's election.
One other thing we may want to talk about, and this relates again to the Ontario NDPs and also in the Northwest Territories and Saskatchewan, strong NDP support. Mm-hmm. There's this tendency that there seems to be a wave of support for the New Democrats. What would you say, Mary, that has, does that have any relation to the NDP's success on a federal scale?
I think it will have. I think we've seen in 1984, as the provincial leaderships were going PC, that everyone started saying, well, that means what we're going to have is a federal PC government. And sure enough, that's what happened. Now, if you're talking about a territory in three provinces going NDP, no matter what happens with Quebec, you're looking at a large population base for the NDP to work on for the federal election, as well as those three provincial campaign people, the workers that will often change from a provincial level to a federal level, they'll be freed up to work for the federal election from their provincial duties, which will help them a lot. I think that both the PCs and the Liberals will be very concerned about the New Democrats in the federal election.
It's now 2 minutes past 10 o'clock. You're listening to live election coverage from CITR FM 101.9 at the University of British Columbia. My name is Ian Gunn. With me in the studio is Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont. And coming up, we've got a little news break at 10 o'clock. And in the newsroom, Jane Tilley and Mark Dinsdale, they've got a look at news and sports.
Thanks, Ian. A Texaco oil rig carrying 80 workers is drifting across the North Sea, about 160 kilometres northeast of the northern Scottish islands. Coast Guard officials say the rig slipped its moorings in a storm, and two rescue helicopters have been sent to the rig. But Coast Guard officials say the crew is in no immediate danger. Elsewhere, the search is still underway off Halifax for a Canadian Forces jet and its crew of two. Rescue officials say the CT-133 would have long since run out of fuel, and they fear the crew has ditched in the ocean. Six Navy and Coast Guard ships and five aircraft are scouring the Atlantic about 30 kilometres south of Halifax. The jet disappeared late this afternoon during an exercise, but no distress call was received. Trade Minister Michael Wilson is telling opponents of free trade to eat their words. He made his comments after Statistics Canada reported that Canadian exports to the US hit a record high of $9.7 billion in August. Wilson calls the export surge to the US impressive, and he credits free trade. Quebec Premier Robert Bourassa says his government will delay extension of the province's 8% sales tax. The tax had originally been scheduled to take effect next January. Bourassa says the tax idea won't be abandoned altogether. Meanwhile, a geographical expert, Henri Dorion, says Quebec should be able to maintain its borders if it does become independent. Speaking to a legislative committee studying sovereignty, Dorion said while legal experts consider the Gulf of St. Lawrence to be federal territory, the provinces dispute that. The Coalition for Gun Control will make a final assault on Parliament Hill next week. That's when proposed gun control legislation returns to the Commons for the third reading. Coalition spokesperson Heidi Rutschen says the group hopes Parliament will accept some last-minute amendments to strengthen the bill. Gun control advocates in the US Congress had hoped the tragedy in Killeen, Texas might have swayed opponents to change their positions, but the US House of Representatives voted down a measure to ban certain models of semi-automatic weapons and large ammunition clips. And meanwhile, authorities in Killeen, Texas are still trying to come up with a motive for the slaughter that left 23 people dead, including the gunman. One suggestion is that George Henard's apparent hatred of women, suggested by statements he made about evil women and vipers. In international news, ANC leader Nelson Mandela met with Prime Minister Mulroney in Harare, Zimbabwe today. They told reporters they were agreed on lifting pupil sanctions against South Africa. They also agreed that economic sanctions should be maintained to fight apartheid. Mandela says that some South African police may have turned into killing machines. The ANC leader told a news conference at the Commonwealth Summit that the question of trust between the ANC and President F.W. de Klerk isn't relevant as violence ravages black townships. Elsewhere, Northern Californians are remembering the big earthquake that struck 2 years ago on Thursday. The quake killed 63 people and leveled the town of Watsonville. Church bells rang at 5:04 p.m. Pacific time to mark the anniversary. And finally, a bit further away from home, the policy-making Central Council of the Palestine Liberation Organization has approved Palestinian participation in a Mideast peace conference. A PLO spokesperson says Palestinians could take part in a joint delegation with Jordan, in line with guidelines set by the Palestinian Parliament last month. The Parliament has set no preconditions. That's it, Ian. Back to you.
Thanks very much, Jane Tilley, from the newsroom this evening. We've had news updates on the half hour so far on the program this evening, and we've also had a look at sports. It's been a busy night in sports, and Mark Dinsdale's here to update us on that.
Yeah, it certainly has been a busy night. The Atlanta Braves have won the first National League pennant in the city's history. The Braves beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-0 behind John Smoltz's shutout pitching and Brian Hunter's two-run homer.
Give me rock, I can put your, I can see me, why? time for I had a sound for this, you know. How I know it's still a little hour. Here's I. See, no joke around business. Maximum loose large. Come on, yo. Yeah. Now I'm sleepy, I just wake up and listen to them coming. It's a basic. We respond to me for a funeral next week. Yeah. You get me cross, you get me angry. As a matter of fact, I say you can't talk to me. You uncle love the sense of a 3 month old baby. Should be in your bed, pushing by your mommy. Missing up your bed, now she's in up your nappy. You couldn't have exercised no mental capability. And who you coming to the dance, but you want to speak. You don't play them DB and the DB. You DJ him look too sleepy. You amp and you change, it no ready. Come listen champion song, come play ram party. Along with DJ, just a shock and ready. The one arrow rocking as your midnight jockey. Along with the youth, what them call Bula G. We chat up on the rhythm and we chat it steady, no Bula G. So Bula G in a the dance hall tonight, Dad. Upon him might be because you know so we nice, and so Bula G because you know him all right, and that she go live for better, that she go right, and in a the dance car we have for striper. Anywhere we go because you know so we riper. Lord Bula G because you know you well right. Upon him might be because you know it all right. And me talk upon him might be can talk all night because Guanangalang youth say Guanangalang youth. Guanangalang because you Guanangalang. Guanangalang, you better Guanangalang, youth. Guanangalang, you better Guanangalang. I know Kamula G, we can't talk it long. Anywhere we go, we can take for you, girl. If a boy try a thing, him a go go hospital. Make him know that we are the free marshal. Then I run a general, a sergeant, because put we a top a man, put them a bottom. Look at this, a youth of us, we can come second. Anywhere we go, because we a gargan. Look at them, a you come out with Vina. Touch Bula G, you want to touch our one. Touch Conqueror, you want to touch Buggy too. Touch this ABC, you want to touch Manju. And you when you coming out, we call everybody nigga Laura. Jump on him and because we don't like Quora. Look at Bula G, he body not the girl. We a go, but from the rich we a go give it to the poor. Make them know this, you can't do down with Dora. When we coming out, because we don't like Sora. Sit down on him and because we don't like we because we call a book, because we be all about anyway that we go with your feet, run up in my wheel out. I'll touch you one more time on this next time. Yes. Hey, it's right now at the midnight. I really want it. Dance the past team, man. All the studio the past team, see? Lord. Gene them a gene. Gene them a gene, gene. Gene them a gene. Dream them a dream, feel them a dream. Dream them a dream, dream. Dream them a dream, dream. Dream them a dream, become it tough like a rock, you know me tough like a steeler. Tough like a rock, you know me tough like steel. Tough like a rock, you know me tough like a steeler. Anything me talk, me not talk and repeat. Me mouth is set up like a M16. Lyrics it a shower like a shot of magazine. Look up all the G, because you know what's semi real. When me come in a dance, me not a go pound wheel. Sit down on your mic. Because you know what's in the street. And then you come here, walk down the street. Met a little girl where they call Pauline. Pauline is a girl I'm matching with Ralph Kenea. I say I'm matching, matching with vitamin. Lord Bula G, because you know what's in the street. And you sit down for them, because you know what's in your net. Anywhere you go, because you know what you need. Lord Bula G, come on me down from the street. Come here, farm me, and because it's a free catch lane. Shake for me, for because you know it's a free sweet. I'm here because it's a VR steam. When you come in a dance because you no say me read. Come and sit up on the reading because you no say we see the car. So Bula G me got 32 tweeter. When you come in a dance I'm for no M16. When you come in a dance because you no say we see the car. Gene my dream. Gene my dream. Gene. Gene my dream. 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 So Bula G because you